their stories. So this book then is a compilation of the stories of the women of Southern Oregon, and some after that in the early 90s. I was in Boston and I collected stories there too and did some presentations there. But over time, you know, I just was able to put together 8 chapters and really address the topics sort of generally that women brought up, and then look at myself as a psychologist, or not, well, I really am a social worker, but my orientation was psychology before I went to social work school, and kind of look at, well, what's the psychological perspective here that I can use around development and the developmental issues for fathers and daughters? And, you know, toward the idea of maybe not only listening to women's stories, but promoting some change in the way we regard fathers. Because historically, we've regarded fathers as sort of an adjunct to the mother. Mm-hmm. That especially in early development, infant development, we don't really expect fathers to be, you know, super involved, very connective, interactive. It's kind of the mother bonding, mother-daughter bonding, mother-child bonding.
But for a while, there's been notions that the bonding with father, at least a much greater role for fathers, does kick in not in infancy, but a bit later, right?
Yes, yes. And it, well, we hope it kicks in. When we listen to what daughters are saying, by and large, they're saying that the time it's supposed to kick in, around 2.5, again, at maybe 7, 9, and certainly around 12, 13, 16, 19, fathers weren't there. For, you know, they were doing what they're supposed to do. Talk about restrictions, cultural restrictions. They were supposed to be earning a living and coming home at night and, you know, just, I guess, sitting behind the newspaper and behind the news and kind of trying to get it together for the evening. And so, and of course, our era, our fathers got it together by just doing their own thing for the evening. I think fathers now are under a lot of, we have expectations of fathers to be involved, whether or not they're working. And the same with moms, because moms are working now. So it's a new day.
Rosemary Dunn Dalton is my guest. Her book is Lamenting Lost Fathers. We're at 552-6782, 1-800-838-3760. We welcome your calls. This is Pat in Roseburg. Pat, welcome to the program.
Hi, Pat.
Hello.
Yeah, you're on, Pat.
I was just wanted to comment about, you know, where's the solution to this? And it sounded like we're talking about, you know, punishment for people who are involved in these situations. And obviously you got to deal with people that are in that situation, but I personally think that the real solution lies in a better case young men as to how to behave and how to treat people. You know, we teach people how to read and write and do mathematics, but we don't teach people in middle school or high school how to participate in a relationship properly. And a lot of people don't have, you know, fathers. There's a lot of marriages that are broken. There's a lot of people who have kids without parent, without fathers, and so how does a young man actually learn to behave properly?
Okay, I think you got. Well, you're on. I think you're on a cell phone, Pat, and you're kind of cutting in and out. But I think we got the gist of what you had to say. Thank you very much for your call, and let's run it by Rosemary. We got to deal with our boys and our young men about this. Yes.
Oh, well, he's got the ideal, of course, and I do think our schools are talking about respect. I think they are, you know, working with children. Of course, here we are in Ashland, and Ashland does take a more progressive stance around equality and certainly sexism and racism and homophobia. Yeah, so of course the answer is to teach kids to respect each other in the classroom, and then we have the issue of families that are in trouble, mm-hmm. families that really need other kinds of help. And I, you know, the social service system is really trying to do that by having family gathering or family meetings. It's part of the, you know, part of the institutionalized look at what happens to kids. But You know, I would like to move on to do a couple of vignettes from the book, if you're ready.
I was just going to ask. There are a couple that I'd like to hear a sense of. If you could give us a little context of what you're going to read.
I'm going to.
I would like to get a sense of what Lamenting Lost Fathers is all about.
Okay. The first chapter is father-daughter communication. And here, you know, what we're doing is we're asking daughters, well, what is the message of the father? And is it the indirect message? And what's the direct message? And so daughters submitted some of their stories, and they describe then their fathers. And this daughter, Miranda, says, my father was a large man, about 6'2", and he was not overweight, but he was real thick and kind of big. I've always thought of him as threatening. He usually sits in the power position in the room and watches people. He doesn't talk a whole lot, except when he feels like it, and then he takes over the conversation. He's real narrow-minded, and he likes to be in control all the time, especially of me and his other children. He runs a tool and die business, and he has quite a bit of money, so he uses that as power. He thinks that since he has money, he can tell other people what to do, and it's hard for me because of where he would like me to be, where I feel like I've been guided to be, and where I really want to be. I'd like to live a different kind of life than what I was raised to live, and I guess I'm having a struggle trying to break apart from that world and get into my own world. A fantasy of mine would be to sit down and to talk to my father as an equal, but I can't ever see it happening in reality.
Now, is this an adult woman?
This is Miranda.
Back on her,
she's 32.
Thinking back on her.
Yeah, mm-hmm. She's in her 30s. Mm-hmm. And she may have been 29, mm-hmm. But she's not an adolescent. She's at the end of young adulthood, and she's still frightened of her father. Still, and yet she makes the connection. She sees that she must somehow, talk to him, and she wants it to be an equal relationship. She may not get that. In her terms.
Well, do you think all daughters pretty much need some important validation or endorsement from their father,
right,
in some form, even,
right,
if they're not an equal? Is that pretty universal?
Well, what's universal is the gift of the father is approval, mm-hmm, and it should start really early. And how do we do that? We tell our little girls, you're special. You're the best daughter in the whole world. I love you. Look at you. You're doing so good. I really like the way you did that today. That ongoing approval. And this can get very challenging during teenage.
Well, as you're talking, I am not seeing a big difference here between this and the father-son relationship.
Right.
In this respect, it's pretty. What's different?
What's different is fathers can cross over into kind of a tender side of themselves and be silly and giddy, and because it's a different sex relationship, it's not a same sex relationship, and they are allowed to do that because they expect the girls to be feminine more, can touch that tender side of themselves. Whereas with sons, there's such pressure to, and you'll hear, fathers calling their sons buddy instead of son real early, 6 months, 8 months, kind of making it, not making it an intimate relationship.
Buddy's more of a... distance?
Well, it's so part of our culture. I don't want to criticize that word because I think... it's just the way it is, but it's definitely the different language. And what the point is that fathers then start expecting, and mothers too, their sons to be little men, to be strong, to be not like a girl, to not be particularly vulnerable.
Well, on the other hand, does the girl have a different expectation of her father or need than the son does?
Early, I don't think so. Later, who knows? Because she's starting, if she's heterosexual, she's starting to move into looking at herself as, a woman, a mother, a wife, a friend, a companion, a lover, and her love object will be ultimately a man. So she starts unconsciously or consciously measuring herself in relation to her father and in relation to who she's going to choose later on. And, you know, little girls and boys start sort of bantering about that stuff pretty early now, especially about, you know, I want to marry you when I grow up, or you're my girlfriend, or will you go with me today?
Yeah.
So,
well, does this complicate things? Does it muddy things? Does it make a healthy, clean relationship more difficult in some ways, this overlay of sexuality?
Of sexuality, you mean gender?
Well, sexuality, the different gendered parent. I mean, the issues
the
between
tension,
fathers.
That wonderful, wonderful tension between a father and a daughter. And she's, you know, she's special.
Wonderful.
She's, yeah. Oh, yeah. I definitely think that, you know, sexuality is so key to our development so early.
But I'm particularly thinking father-daughter and
yes,
how they...
that tension. That tension needs to be handled really well, especially during adolescence. As she's coming, going forward, finding other friends, starting to relate to peers more than family, she wants to go out. She starts wearing the clothes she wants. How he handles that really determines so much of how she feels about herself.
Well, we have a stereotype, almost a joke in the culture about the dad sitting on the porch with the shotgun waiting for her to,
yes,
to
we
come
do.
Home. And,
yes.
And I think a lot. I raised a daughter who's 18 now.
I've met
and
your daughter.
And I know what that's a little bit about what that's about. It's a confusing feeling for a father.
Yeah, good
and
for you.
Is that a place where trouble and challenges can really flare up?
All human relationships are challenging.
Mm-hmm.
All human relationships have moments of troublesome, you know, stages or whatever. So of course we're complicated. It's a very precious process, and we all make mistakes, and it's not perfect.
Did any of the women in your groups or clients talk about that particular time, either when they started dating and the attitudes of their fathers and how that might have impacted them?
Yes, generally speaking. Now, let me see. What did I come up with here? I was going to talk about father affection. Generally speaking, what we see is that time where that daughter starts becoming a woman, and we watch to see how father handles that. And, you know, if he's been a father who's connected with his mom or with his daughter, he'll have her on his lap and so forth. And then all of a sudden, daughters will talk about he removed her from his lap. That was it. That was the last time she got to sit on daddy's lap. So that how you handle that seems to me as a man, you might want to think about, well, how did I handle that? How did I remove her from my lap? Because I was uncomfortable, and because I didn't want her to know that. I didn't want her to know that it wasn't her fault.
Yeah.
How do you handle
and,
that?
And she might take it as her fault, something she didn't
well,
know.
Well, abruptly. If it's abrupt and if it's with scorn. Mm-hmm. And you're too big for that. If it's got that scolding, blaming tone.
Yeah.
And it's troublesome. This kid's 12. She's 11. She's 13. She doesn't really know what that means, what that's supposed to mean, except that she's getting other messages from outside of the family system that tells her what it means, because she's being challenged around drugs, sexuality, you know, abortion, all those issues now. We're talking about them. So... it's a lot of pressure.
We're talking to Rosemary Dunn Dalton about her experience as a clinical psychologist, and some of which she has drawn together in a book called Lamenting Lost Fathers, Adult Daughters Search for the Message of the Father. Your comment or question is welcome at 552-6782, 1-800-838-3760. Let me just ask you one more question about the universality of all this. In some of the personal work I've done, I've noted, and particularly with other men of my generation, an amazingly common phenomenon where men can remember times as boys, as young boys, when they took a message from their father that they didn't matter very much. And, it varies. There's some abusive fathers who told their sons they were worthless. But in my experience, it's been a minority. And the really general experience were those busy 50s and 60s fathers who were out doing their own thing, trying to establish their own worth through their career, and would come home and be zombies in front of the TV. And that the message that taken away was, you're not nearly as important as the other things I do, my work and my
That's right.
other things. And that has stayed with us in a.
But what a bind, because daughters have mom. Daughters have their mothers at that point to turn to for intimacy, for challenging, for asking, for exploring, for looking to her for a model. Who does the son turn to then? The son turns to mom, maybe, except that the culture has told him that if he's too close to his mother, there's something wrong.
Yes.
And there's certain a normal developmental process where young sons do start keeping things from their mother, as they should. It's part of their, part of what they do, part of what their job is, really, is to develop themselves. So then where does he turn? Where does he turn? If he doesn't have his father, he can't be too close to mom because that's, you know,
wrong.
There's a taboo. So my question to you is where does he turn then?
Well, perhaps to peers, and perhaps he just goes inside and says, I guess I'm not worth very much, and I'll just kind of cope however I can.
Yeah. Or to young girls, to have them pick up the slack, you know.
You mean so, later in life?
Well, I don't know. What do you think?
Sometimes. Let's take a call. Connie and Eugene.